Boys and girls, I've got so much in this latest episode that I haven't even got time for the bit before the theme music. Oh no, the theme music's already starting.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, it's just me, my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. Now, yes, you noticed that I changed the theme music back to the old one because last episode, I listened back to it. I sounded pretty angry, especially during the quiz. I don't know who'd upset me. Was it that I only scored 8? 8's a decent score. Anyway, I'm an angry elf again, but don't worry, I also have the IQ of a rabbit and I'm simple. So, hang on, sorry. Got to do the interactive bit. You ready for the interactive bit? Here it comes. You excited about the show? Of course you are. So am I. Let's get started. And scene. So, a couple of things. Firstly, do you remember in the last episode, I said that they had mince pies already in Lidl? And I thought, do you know what? I should check what the best before date is. Well, I went in. I checked the best before date. On their standard ones, it was like the 6th of December. And I sort of thought, well, yeah, fair enough. You know, that's December. People could be eating their mince pies. And then I had a look at the deluxe ones, the all butter mince pies. They go out of date on the 14th of November. So if you're buying some now, you've got to eat them before. I love mince pies. Don't get me wrong. I love them. But I tend to wait until sort of mid to, well, to be honest, December before I start on the mince pies. So I've no idea what's going on there. There's people out there, clearly, that are either buying them early and eating them out of date, or they're just eating their mince pies. And if that's your bag, I say go for it. Another thing, I got an email from someone I hadn't heard from in ages. In fact, I was starting to wonder if he existed. And that is Barry Grapefruit. Now, if you've listened to old episodes, you'll know that Barry Grapefruit used to get in contact quite frequently, actually. And he was always a little bit rude. But this, you got to hear this. This is what he's written. I hope you're sitting down because I have shocking news. You actually managed to create a decent podcast episode last week. Hear that? That's me. He's put, I can hardly believe it. Was there a full moon? Or did you finally figure out what content means? I'm still recovering from the shock of hearing something other than your usual ramblings. It was like a breath of fresh air after all those episodes that made me question my life choices. Seriously though, if you keep this up, you might scare off all your loyal fans who've come to expect, well, let's call it uniquely challenging listening experiences. Please don't get too cocky. Let's not forget you have a long way to go before you reach actually good. But hey, baby steps, right? Looking forward to your next attempt at brilliance. Best, Barry. P.S. Just don't make a habit of it. I can only handle so much excitement. Well, don't worry about that, Barry. Okay, I will not be making a habit of good episodes. It was a fluke. I wasn't even aware that it happened, but you spotted it. Well done, Barry. Great to hear from you, by the way. I hope you're keeping well. I hope the family are well. Yeah, Barry Grapefruit. And now, I don't know how many Barry Grapefruits there are in the world, but his email address is barrygrapefruit25@. I'm not going to tell you what it's at, because you might inundate the poor guy with emails. But there you go. There's at least 25 Barry Grapefruits with email accounts with that server. Anyway, good to hear from you, Barry. Yeah, what else have we got? That's pretty much it, I think. So let's start the show with this.
Starry, starry night, paint your palette blue and gray. Look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the darkness in my soul, shadows on the hill.
So boys and girls, that song I played just there, that's a little bit misleading. Because you see, it's not Starry Starry Night that I'm talking about, it's Starry Gazy Pie, shove your pilchards through the crust. That's all I know. Yeah, so this is about a pie called Starry Gazy Pie or Stargazy Pie. And this is a tradition that started in, well, I say started in, it's pretty much stayed in Cornwall, which is on the southwest tip of the UK. It's sort of a little bit that goes, well, I'm not going to describe it. Look at a map, look up Cornwall, you'll find it. There's a little village, a fishing village called Mousehole. And I believe it's called Mousehole because of the shape of the harbour. I could be wrong. I've been wrong about loads of stuff. But I believe that's why it's called Mousehole. And on the 23rd of December, they hold a festival called Tom Bawcock's Eve. And this is a legend that goes back to the 16th century. So the story goes that in the town of Mousehole, in December, they're having these huge storms. Now, this was a fishing village, so no one could go out to sea in their boats. And it had been going on for so long that they had no food left. And everyone was like worried they were all going to starve to death. And Christmas was coming as well. So on the 23rd of December, Tom Bawcock, who was a fisherman, got in his boat despite everyone's protestations. I'm guessing they were going, "Don't do it, Tom Bawcock. Don't do it. Actually, please do it because I'm starving. But, you know, come back safely with plenty of fish as well." I wasn't there. It was like 400 or 500 years ago, but you get the picture. Anyway, he went out and braved the storm in his boat and he made a massive catch. And he came back and they cooked up all the fish in a great big pie. And what they did was they stuck a lot of the sardines' heads out of the pie to prove that there was fish in there, because no one could believe that Tom Bawcock had braved the storm and caught all this fish for everyone to eat. Yeah! So there were 7 types of fish in there, and like I said, the little fish's heads are poking out of the crust. And that's why it's called Stargazy Pie, because the fishes are gazing up at the stars. Yeah, some people do it with the tails sticking out as well. So if you want to make one, I'd highly advise it. Everyone loves to eat a pie where the fish heads are sticking out of it. You can look at them and go, "Oh yeah, that's right, I'm eating a dead animal." So yeah, it contains potatoes and eggs and 7 different types of fish. And every year in the town of Mousehole, people still eat this famous pie to the memory of Tom Bawcock, who saved the village from starvation. To be honest, they could have just had an egg and potato pie and he didn't have to risk his life, but let's not talk about that, okay? They needed the protein. Well, there's protein in eggs. Let's not talk about that either. So because of this tradition, there's been songs and poems written about it, and I'm going to play you a bit of the song of the legend of Stargazy Pie. Here it comes.
A merrier place you may believe was Mousehole on Tom Bawcock's Eve. To be there then, who wouldn't wish to sup of 7 sorts of fish? When murky breath cleared the path, come lances fur to fry. And then a sad, a bit, a scab, and starry gazy pie. A merrier place you may believe was Mousehole.
So that song was sung by a lady called Brenda Wootton, not to be confused with Pamela Wootton. There you go, Pamela, said your name. I know you like that. Yeah, she sung that song, but the song was written in 1927 by Robert Morton Nance. And I'm going to read out all the words to you. Now, there's 2 versions on Wikipedia. You've got the old Cornish one. I'll read out a bit of it for you, and then you'll understand why I'm going to read the modern English one. A merry place, you may believe, was Mousehole upon Tom Bawcock's Eve. To be there, then, who wouldn't wish to sup a 7 sorts of fish? I was putting a bit of a Scottish accent there, which I shouldn't have been. Cornish accent's more like this. I'm going to read the whole poem for you now. It goes, a merrier place you may believe was Mousehole on Tom Bawcock's Eve. To be there then, who wouldn't wish to sup on 7 sorts of fish? When morgy broth had cleared the path, comed lances for a fry. And then us had a bit of scad and starry gazy pie. Next comed fair maids, bra thrusty jades, as made our oozles dry. And ling and hake enough to make a running shark to sigh. As each we'd clunk as health were drunk in bumpers brimming high, and when up came Tom Bawcock's name, we praised him to the sky.
So there's a few words in there you might not have got. So when he talks about morgy broth, he's talking about dogfish. And when he says about the lances, they are sand eels. Then he talks about scad, which is horse mackerel, and fair maids are smoked pilchards. Pilchards are like a larger sardine, apparently. And thrusty jades, turns out, were wild young women, so I'm not sure what's going on there. And then oozles, as made our oozles dry, that's your throat. And clunk was to swallow, and bumpers, when it says in bumpers brimming high, it means your beer glasses. Yeah, so there you go. That's the story of Starry Gazy Pie, or Stargazy Pie. I hope you enjoyed it. If ever you're in Cornwall on the 23rd of December, head down to Mouse Hole. You might want to have a slice. You might not, though. I've seen it. Sort of a bit off-putting, seeing the little fishes looking at you. So the deal is they fillet the fish and take all the bones out as well. So all that's left is the head and the tail on either end, and there's just flesh in the middle. That's how they cook it. But it's not like the whole fish is in there. Or it is, but they've gutted it and took his bones out. Anyway, that's the story of Tom Bawcock's Eve and Stargazy Pie.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
So what did the ghost say when he came into the tiki bar? I'm just here for the booze. Okay, it's spooky season around here. The time when children and adults will put on scary costumes, go door to door, and hope to come away with something sugary or liquory. We know our Halloween came from Ireland's Samhain and our Irish immigrants carving turnips, but I'm not sure if it ever made it to the UK. Maybe Jack can let us know. This scary holiday does remind me of a scene in one of those adjacent Christmas movies starring the King of Christmas, Chevy Chase. It is kind of like Clark Griswold moves to the country. The film is Funny Farm, which stars Chase as Andy Farmer, a writer who moves from the city to the quaint little town of Redbud, Vermont. What he discovers is that instead of the villagers being kind, charming, and neighborly, they are all mean-spirited, suspicious, and greedy. However, in the end, it becomes kind of a Christmas movie when Farmer pays the whole town to decorate for the holidays and to dress up to look like a cozy Currier and Ives painting so he can sell his house. This climactic sequence makes it worth watching, but my Do You Hear What I Hear nerves got spooked earlier in the film when Chevy Chase discovers a casket buried on his property. Yes, a casket. Now, some of you UK listeners may think I'm referring to a small jewelry box, which is the English definition for casket dating back to the 15th century. However, the word casket has been used interchangeably here in the States for the word coffin since 1870. Although there are distinct differences between a casket and a coffin. A casket is rectangular in shape and often has a split lid for viewing the deceased. A coffin is predominantly hexagonal. It has six sides and it's tapered at the shoulders and at the feet, and it has no swinging half door. Now, coffin comes from the old French word coffin and the Latin word coffinus, which translates into basket or hamper. It was first used in 1380 as a box for the display and the burial of a corpse. Americans favor caskets, as coffins died out years ago in the States, while coffins still have a long history in the UK. It all began around 1700, when a change in English law allowed all people to be buried in a coffin. Previous to this, coffins were reserved for the wealthy. The poor were just commonly buried in a shroud or a sheet and placed straight into the ground. English burials were also common in the U.S., and the coffin was a key part of that ritual. The term casket was not yet in common use here. Like the country, the funeral trade in the States was in its infancy, so coffins were traditionally very plain and almost exclusively made from wood. It took the massive amount of death and violence in the U.S. Civil War to change the concept of burying the dead into something distinctly American. In an effort to improve upon the unpleasantness, we Yanks began to distance ourselves from the traditional funeral. Americans were encouraged to buy local fabrics for their mourning outfits rather than to use the more expensive imported fabrics. Instead of imitating traditions from across the sea, we began to develop our own unique relationship with death. This change also impacted the coffin, which was soon abandoned as a relic of the past. By the turn of the 20th century, caskets had replaced coffins in America. The casket became the American response to improving the coffin. They had the same purpose. They were just notably more dressed up and showy, which I think is a true American response. So enough with burying the dead. Now it's time to go out and wake them. Cheers and happy Christmas.
Yeah, for the record, we do actually celebrate Halloween in the UK. I've taken the girls out trick-or-treating every year. It's not as big as it is in the States, you know, people make a minor effort. We had a Halloween party for the girls last year as well, that was all right. So it is something, it's just not as big as in the States. With regards to coffins though, that was interesting, wasn't it? Do you know what, that's another one, wouldn't even crossed my mind that we call them coffins, and in the US they call them caskets. I don't know if I've ever heard it called a casket in this country. Possible, I don't know. Anyway, great one, Bob. Thanks for that. It'll be back in a bit, but right now, we're doing this.
Book review, book review.
Christmas.
Book review!
So boys and girls, this has become a bit of a Christmas tradition. Yeah, every year, I get sent these books from Biblioasis, and they're very small books, and each one has a Victorian ghost story in it. And they're part of the Seth's Christmas Ghost Stories series. Now, Seth is an artist, and so he's taken these old stories and he's added his own artwork to them. And they're delightful little books, and now there are 29 in the whole series. So if you want to collect them, get yourself out there and collect them. Shouldn't be difficult to find. Just look for Seth's Christmas Ghost Stories. And again, this year, they've sent me the three latest books in the series, and I'm going to be giving them away. First, let me describe the stories for you. So the first one is called Captain Dalgetty Returns by Lawrence Whistler, and it says, after the death of his wife in childbirth, Captain Dalgetty has grown distant from his estate and young daughter. But during his walk home one afternoon, a sudden thunderstorm causes a series of revelations, and the captain's life takes an unexpected turn. The second one is called The Amethyst Cross by Mary Fitt. And when Margaret finds a cottage to rent in the moorlands for her visiting Aunt Dorothea, she pays no mind to its rumoured dark history. But when Dorothea goes missing only days after her arrival, a haunting tale of greed and murder soon comes to light. And the final one, Podolo, by L.P. Hartley. When a group of tourists visits the deserted island of Podolo, one wants to rescue a feral cat they find there, and the others reluctantly agree. Unfortunately, the rescue proves more difficult than they expect, and they soon discover they're not alone on Podolo. There you go. Those are the three ghostly stories. If you want to win them, you have to do the same as you did last year. You have to email me the following three words. Ready? Yeah, I'll have them. Now, if you send me, yes, I'll have them, you're not getting nothing, Mush. Okay, it's yeah, I'll, at us four words, isn't it? Where do I get... To be honest, nearly five, because I'll is I will. Sorry, I don't know where I got three words from. I wasn't thinking. Can we start again? The four words are, yeah, I'll have 'em. Okay, there is no TH at the start of M. And av is A-V-E. Yeah is Y-E-A-H. I will accept Y-E-H. I apostrophe L-L is I'll. So send me those words, yeah, I'll have 'em. And maybe... you'll have them. I'll put the names in the hat and then I'll pull out the winner. And they'll get all three books, the lucky person. But if you don't win, you could still pick them up. Just search for Biblioasis Seth's Christmas Ghost Stories. Just so you know, boys and girls, I don't get a cent out of this and I don't even keep the books. Okay? I don't get a thing. I just think it's a great tradition. I think they're lovely little books. And I think it's something that people that love Christmas might enjoy, reviving that old tradition of Christmas ghost stories. So, you know what to do? Send, yeah, I'll have them to my email address, totalchristmas@gmail.com. Why not pause the podcast and do it now? It's only four words. Send it through and you could have them. I'll probably give it about 10 days after this episode comes out. Might be a little bit less. So we're looking at the 5th or the 6th of November. That's when I'll pull the name out of the hat and record it. So in the next episode, we'll find out who won. So yeah, if you want to win them, send "yeah, I'll have them" to totalchristmas@gmail.com. Also, while you're there, maybe wait until the end of the episode and you could send me your score from the quiz, which is coming up in just a minute, but not yet. Right now, it's this.
I'm singing, I'm in a store and I'm singing, I'm in a store and I'm singing.
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole.
Now, boys and girls, in the last episode, I scored 8. And one of those questions that I got wrong was this. In 1992, which singer hit the top 10 with the song "Christmas Through Your Eyes"?
Wanna see Christmas through your eyes. Want everything to be the way it used to be. Back to being a child again, thinking the world was mine. I wanna see Christmas.
And I made a bit of a kerfuffle about the fact that, no, it didn't. I saw no record in the, because this is a UK-based book. I saw no record of that song getting in the top 10 in the UK. And that song is the title track to an album of the same name, which was released the following Christmas in 93. And I saw no reference of that in the charts anywhere. Then I got an email from Benji Pearson, who said, the album reached the top 10 on the Billboard Holiday Charts. I was like, maybe that's what they were talking about. But then I got a few more emails from other people that were familiar with the song. And it turns out that I think most of my US listeners knew the song. I did not. Well, now I do. I looked into it and this is the deal. It turns out that the song was actually a B-side and it got to number 8 in the UK charts. Now, I'm sure you've all heard of Gloria Estefan. She has sold over 100 million records and she is one of the biggest selling female artists of all time. She actually started her career in the 70s, but then she had a lot of success in the mid to late 80s with the Miami Sound Machine. So in 1975, Gloria joined a band called the Miami Latin Boys. And when she joined, because it wasn't just boys anymore, they changed their name to the Miami Sound Machine. And eventually they changed it to Gloria Estefan and the Miami Sound Machine. And even to this day, her backing band is still the Miami Sound Machine, although apparently it's got none of the original members in it. Now, in 1992, she released a compilation single of some of her biggest hits, and it was called the Miami Mega Mix. Although in some places is called the Miami Hit Mix. And it was a combination of the songs Dr. Beat, Conga, Rhythm Is Gonna Get You, 1, 2, 3, 4, Come On Baby, Say You Love Me, and Get On Your Feet. Yeah, so it was a combination of those five songs. And I remember when that single came out, that was in 1992. And the B-side to that single was Christmas Through Your Eyes. Now, in the US, Miami Hit Mix wasn't released as an A-side. It was actually the B-side to I See Your Smile. Yeah, so there you go. Now, the song Christmas Through Your Eyes was written by Gloria Estefan and Diane Warren. Now, you might have heard of Diane Warren, you might not, but she's had some massive hits. She's written 9 number ones and she was responsible for If I Could Turn Back Time, doo-doo. How do I live without you? I want to know. And also she wrote, don't want to close my eyes. I don't want to fall asleep because I miss you, babe. And I don't want to miss a thing because even when I dream of you.
Hey, there's no singing in the North Pole.
Yes, there is.
No, it's not.
We sing all the time.
No, it's not.
Especially when we make toys. So they wrote that song together and it was the B-side to Miami Megamix, which in the UK, the Miami Megamix got to number 8. So there you go. So my quiz question, which I thought was wrong, was a bit wrong, but not completely wrong, because I don't really think the B-sides count. I don't think they do. Most people never hear the B-side to a single, do they? Anyway, I'd never heard it, but like I said earlier, I have now, and I don't mind it. It's a nice song. It's got a wonderful sentiment to it, which I think a lot of us feel, you know. As you get older and you have children, you see Christmas through their eyes, and it brings back the magic again. And that's what the song's all about. So the following year, she released her Christmas album, and that is called Christmas Through Your Eyes. And all the songs in that are just covers of classics, and this was the only original one. So there we go. That is the story of Christmas Through Your Eyes, which turns out most of you probably already knew, but not me.
I wanna see Christmas, Christmas through your eyes.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
I tell you what, boys and girls, I sit through some stuff. I really do. This episode's version of A Christmas Carol is something, I suppose. Now, most of you, I imagine, have never heard of this. It's called Mr. Scrooge, and it's from 1977, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about the history of it. So this is an opera version of A Christmas Carol, and the opera was written in 1976 by Sam Douglas from the University of South Carolina. So it says here it was directed by Donald Gray and produced for South Carolina ETV, or SCETV, by Sidney Palmer. So, like I said, this is an opera version, and I believe it's a condensed version of the original Sam Douglas opera. So the opera first appeared in 1976 as a new work by the Opera Workshop in Drayton Hall at the University of South Carolina Music Department. And a producer from the South Carolina Educational Television Network, or SCETV, Sidney Palmer, liked the production so much that he conceived the idea of this new work to be adapted to a 30-minute stage production. Filming was underway at the South Carolina ETV Network Studios in January of 1977, and the production premiered the following December and ran for the next 8 years each Christmas on the SCETV network. This opera, like I said, was written by Sam Douglas, and I know very little about opera, but I've read this. Mr. Scrooge is based on a 12-tone row musical composition. The technique is a means of ensuring that all 12 notes of the chromatic scale are sounded as often as one another in a piece of music, while preventing the emphasis of any through the use of tone rows. I'm not going to go any more, actually, because it just doesn't make any sense to me. But I get the idea that it's a 12-note musical scale, that's including all the letters A up to G, and then the semitones in between, and they try to keep it even throughout. Now, there's no proper tune to this opera. It's just people sort of singing, and there's no talking in it at all. It's all singing non-stop from start to finish. Yeah, there you go. That's pretty much all the information I could find about this, because there's no page for it on IMDb or pretty much anywhere, to be honest. The information I did get was from the South Carolina ETV website, and I'm guessing it was never shown nationally in the US, but it is now because it's on YouTube, and that's where I watched it. So I'm going to run through it for you. It starts off, you've got Jacob Marley doing the intro, and he's singing that. And it's just his face on like a sort of fiery background or smoky background behind him. And he sings an introduction telling us about Ebenezer Scrooge. Then he goes into Scrooge's office, and he goes past Bob Cratchit, who's writing away at his desk. And a couple of his papers like fall off the desk as if to suggest that the wind of the ghost has blown the pages off, I don't know. And he goes up to Scrooge. And then Scrooge starts giving Cratchit a hard time. Now, when I found this video, it had been put up on YouTube by Tom Wood. And Tom Wood is the gentleman who plays Ebenezer Scrooge. And I don't really want to insult Tom Wood, but I will say that his acting, I would equate to that of a 10-year-old. To say he's overacting is an understatement. He really is going for it. Like, such emphatic body movements and hand gestures and everything. It's uncalled for because no one else is doing it. It's only him as Scrooge. Anyway, he goes over, starts giving Cratchit a hard time. Again, they're singing all the way through.
Cratchit! Cratchit! What are you doing, you dunce of a clerk? Expecting pay for an honest day's work. Cratchit! Cratchit! Have you finished with that ledger yet?
No, sir.
You certainly do work incredibly slow.
I only got it 5 minutes ago. My hands are so cold, I can't work very fast.
I gave you my lump of coal, baby, for last.
Then he goes back to his desk, and as he's writing at his desk, some carolers sort of let themselves in, and he's there writing away at his desk, and he starts sort of singing along to the carol, and then he realises what's happening, so he sort of goes out and kicks them all out, and then they all leave, but the last one in is his nephew Fred. So then they have a conversation. Now, in places, they do keep reasonably close to the dialogue of A Christmas Carol. I'm going to play a bit for you now. Have a listen to this.
A Merry Christmas, Uncle. God bless you. The humbug. Christmas, a humbug, Uncle. I can't believe that's true. Christmas is a humbug, of that I'm very sure. What right have you to be happy compared to a church mouse you're poor? Why should you be gruff? You're rich enough. The humbug!
Do you see what I mean? So that was pretty much like A Christmas Carol, but sung in such an awful way. Yeah, so then this really interested me. Bob Cratchit asks if he can leave early. He doesn't ask for the next day off, which is what happens in the book. Although he doesn't ask, does he? Scrooge actually says, I suppose you'll be wanting tomorrow off. Like Scrooge actually instigates that. But in this one, Bob actually says, you know, it's Christmas Eve, can I go home early? And Scrooge lets him. And I thought that was a bit of a mistake, to be honest, because your boss letting you go home early is the sign of a good boss. And that suggests Scrooge is a good boss. And he even says, I suppose you'll be expecting me to pay you a full day's wage. And it's like, well, then you're definitely a good boss. So that's a real plot hole. I'm disappointed in that. We don't get any portly gentlemen, which is a good thing, because the shorter they can keep this, the better. I wouldn't be surprised if the original opera did have the portly gentleman in, and I will come to that later on. But generally, this is a condensed version. So Scrooge goes home. We don't see anything on the door knocker. None of that happens. He's home and he's sat there. He's not eating gruel, which is what it says in the book. It looks more like stew because he's chewing on it. And when I say chewing on it, he's really chewing on it, because that's the kind of acting we're getting from our Scrooge. And in the bowl, he sees the face of Jacob Marley. Yeah, he's looking in the bowl and there's Jacob Marley in there singing to him. Don't forget, it's all singing. Yeah, I didn't like that. It was just quite surprising. It's one of those things you think, oh, they're doing that, are they? And they did do that. So he comes out of the stew and they're stood there chatting, and it's really bad because they've green screened him in, okay, which makes him look a bit otherworldly because he's not all there. It's not like they've just sort of like faded him out a bit. It's like, it's hard to explain, but it's sort of more bits missing of him the way they filmed it. I don't think they should have done that. They didn't need to. And also, when Scrooge is looking at him, he's looking in the wrong place. He's looking just slightly to the side of where Jacob Marley would be, and Jacob Marley's not the correct size that he should be because the way they've stuck him in there. Anyway, Marley obviously tells him he's going to be haunted by some ghosts, and then Scrooge goes to bed. He's woken up by the ghost of Christmas Past, again green screened in there for no good reason. They take him back, not to his school, they take him back to Fezziwig's. Okay, now this is an interesting one as well, because Fezziwig comes up because, oh, no more working today. Here, have a beer. This whole scene is about, I don't know, maybe less than a minute, I'm not sure. But it gives him, he pours, actually probably more than a minute, because he pours out all three drinks, right? They have a quick sip and they're out the door. There's no standing around having a chat. There's no party whatsoever. It's only them three there. And it's not Dick Wilkins, it's Jacob Marley. And the three of them have a quick sip of their drinks and then they get their jackets on and out the door. And I thought, well, to be honest, Scrooge let Cratchit leave early. If we'd given him a beer, Scrooge is as good as Fezziwig. I guess that's the difference between a good boss and a bad boss, giving you a sip of beer. And they only sip it quickly. It's not like they've got a whole pint and they're sat there having a chat and, oh, let's move on. Then we get Belle and they're in some house, I don't know where. Maybe they live together. Wouldn't have thought so in Victorian times. But she's got all her bags packed and she's walking down the stairs and she's singing about leaving Scrooge. And then she goes to the door and then she walks back up to Scrooge and she's still singing about leaving him. And then she leaves and Scrooge sort of gets up and he looks confused. He doesn't look lost or forlorn that he's lost her. He's just like, what happened there then? Pretty obvious, Scrooge. She was singing all about it. He should have been able to understand. Yeah, he didn't whisper a word in that, actually. It's the same actor playing the young Scrooge. So pretty much the old Scrooge has just got white hair. That's the difference between the two. Then we get the ghost of Christmas Present. And he's wearing a long red robe and he's got a holly crown with a really wide brim. really wide, sort of almost like as wide as a Mexican sombrero of holly around his head. He's played by the same guy that plays Nephew Fred, and he's there, right? He's got like a bowl of, I don't know what it is, sand or salt or something, I'm not sure. And he's like, oh, what you got in a bowl? And they go out on the street, and, oh, again, sorry, when he first turns up, he's green screened in there. So Scrooge is sort of trying to look at where he'd be. And he doesn't look that big either, because they've green screened him in, and he's like, is he sitting there? Where's he sitting? Scrooge can't seem to tell, because Scrooge doesn't know where he's looking. Then they go on the street, and it's not green screened anymore. And it's like, why bother green screening it in the first place? Why not just have him there in Scrooge's bedroom? Filming it that way, it would have looked a lot tidier, a lot better. Anyway, they go out on the street, and as people are walking by, the ghost of Christmas Present is like throwing, I say sand, we call it sand, I don't know what it's in there, but you can see it, so it's not like a really fine powder.
Yours is quite a pleasant task. What do you have in that little red basket? Christmas cheer, that's the thing. Oh, would you like to have?
He's throwing that up in the air, and the people walking past are all suddenly all happy, and it's quite funny because Scrooge is going, this bloke's like walking along real miserable, and Scrooge flings some sand up in the air at the bloke, and the bloke's arms go up in the air, and he's like, da da da, he marches off with a brand new lease on life. Well done, Scrooge. And Scrooge is enjoying this, which is nice. Then they go to the Cratchit's house, and his kids are there, and they're all full grown. Yeah, he's only got three kids, Cratchit has. No, sorry, four, including Tiny Tim, who's not there. But all his kids, they're full-grown adults. They all are. And this is a weird one, because Cratchit comes in with Tiny Tim, and it cuts to Scrooge, who's saying, tell me, Spirit, will Tiny Tim die? He's only just met Tiny Tim, and straight away he's asking. And Scrooge is back in his bedroom, and it's like, there's no like clear panel on the wall or anything where they're watching Cratchit. It's just like they're in a separate room, but it's like somehow we're supposed to think he can see this? I don't get quite how that works. And then this bit annoyed me. Have a listen to this.
Or perhaps you say he should die now without procrastination and thereby decrease the world's surplus population.
Oh, taunt me not with my own words. I knew what I said, I'd do anything within my power before I see him dead.
Yeah, so the ghost says about decreasing the surplus population, echoing Scrooge's words. Scrooge never said them words. I even, after the second time watching it, thought, hang on a minute, and I rewound it. It's like, at no point does he say that, because he says it to the portly gentleman, doesn't he, in the book. Well, there are no portly gentlemen in this version, and that's what I said earlier, that I think maybe in the original version of this opera, there were portly gentlemen, and that was a line that Scrooge uttered, and that's why they've used it again later. Anyway, then we go back to the Cratchits again, and Cratchit's wife, who is incidentally the same person who played the Ghost of Christmas Past. You never got to see her face then. It was all really weirdly filmed. She was green screened in as well. And Cratchit's wife's talking about giving Scrooge a piece of her mind. And then we cut in close on Tiny Tim, and he has got the most interesting bowl haircut you've ever seen. A proper bowl it is. Well done. And he says, God bless us everyone. That's the end of the Ghost of Christmas Present. Now we get the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. Again, he's green screened in, and Scrooge can't seem to look at him again. And he just can't seem to. He's like looking at the general direction, sort of ish, but he's no idea. Why not just have a bloke stood there in a robe? There's no reason to do it that way. They've just done it to make him look more otherworldly. They didn't need to. Then they go into the street, and there's two blokes talking, and they're talking about Scrooge. Because they say his name. And that's one thing in the book, which I mentioned last episode, about how the whole point of the end bit is they're talking about someone who's died, and Scrooge doesn't realise it's him. Because he's just in denial, I guess, because it's pretty blooming obvious. In this one, they're actually talking and saying his name. Yeah, it's Scrooge. Who cares if Scrooge is dead?
I only know what others said, that he was found some 3 days dead. 3 days, and no one found him there. 'Twas Mr. Scrooge, who would care?
Anyway, So then it pans across to Scrooge, and he stood there talking to the ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, who is at some points behind him and at some points in front of him, and Scrooge doesn't again know where to look. This time it looks more like it's been done by a line drawing. I don't know why they chose to do it that way. It doesn't make any sense. It looks ridiculous. I guess they filmed it and they're like, well, we've done it now. We can't bother refilming the whole lot with the bloke stood there. What were we thinking? Anyway, the ghost of Christmas Yet to Come is pointing, and Scrooge is like, what are you pointing at? And where he's pointing, it is nowhere near the gravestone that pops up at the front of the screen with E. Scrooge written on it. And he's like, oh no, I'm dead. Just annoyed about it all, to be honest. Just annoyed about it. Anyway, that's the end of that whole bit, and we get Scrooge waking up to a brand new lease of life. So he's all happy, he's gonna change, he's singing about it because he's singing all the blooming time, and he opens the window. Turns out he's on the ground floor, and there's just two blokes stood outside his bedroom window just chatting, literally right by his bedroom window, like a foot from his bedroom window, and they're just there having a conversation. And he's like, oh, what day is it? And they're like, what do you mean, what day is it? He's like, what day is it today? And he's like, well, it's Christmas, obviously. So he's like all excited because it's still Christmas Day. The boy's told him that. I say boy, right? Because he says to him, here, my boy, are you quick on your feet? Can you go and buy a turkey from the next street? And the boy says yes. The boy is a full-grown man. And not just that, he has a perfect moustache. A perfect moustache. A big, bushy moustache. Not bushy, bushy. But like, you know, a decent moustache. And he calls him boy. And the boy, or the moustache man, as I'll call him, calls Scrooge sir, as if he is a boy. Ridiculous. And then he says, can you buy this turkey? Here, this should do it, he says, right? And he gives him, he sort of throws it out, right? An invisible coin. And I say an invisible coin, there might be a coin between his finger and thumb. It's a bit blurry, because it's quite an old clip. I don't think there is anything there. But it's like he plucks this coin from, I don't know, his windowsill? Is that where he keeps his coins? We've seen him messing around with coins earlier on, and they were a lot bigger than this. And he's like, here, this should do it. Some tiny pissant invisible coin. Turkeys weren't that cheap back then. That's why Bob Cratchit was having a goose, because turkeys were more expensive. And he gives him this pissant little, God knows what it's meant to be. I don't know what's going on there. And I'll tell you what, I've seen a Victorian penny, and they're pretty damn big. If he held one up, you'd know about it. So I don't know what coin, some magical tiny pissant coin. I don't want to go into it. It just really annoyed me, as you can tell. Then he goes out in the street and he's greeting everyone, saying, hello, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. And he greets this guy and it's Fred. And Fred can't believe it. And Fred's like, is that my Uncle Scrooge? And Scrooge's like, yes, I am, because he sings everything. And they go together to Cratchit's house and they're very happy to see him, open the door. And first thing they do, get him a beer. Get a beer for good old Scrooge. And they sing this.
A Merry Christmas to everyone here, and may God give you a Happy New Year.
A Merry Christmas to everyone here, and may God give you a Happy New Year.
A Merry Christmas to everyone here, and may God give you a Happy New Year.
So everyone's very, very happy, and it ends with Tiny Tim singing in a very good voice this. And that's the end. And quite frankly, I'm glad. One thing I want to point out, The Ghost of Christmas Present was played by the same chap who played Nephew Fred. Although, if you look at the titles as they go past, Fred was played by a gentleman by the name of Porter Stokes, and The Ghost of Christmas Present was played by a gentleman by the name of Porter Stokes. Yeah, they've spelled his name wrong. I don't know which one his name is. Is it Stokes or is it Stocks? I don't know. I tell you what I do know, though. I never have to watch that again. Merry Christmas. If you want to check it out, let me ask you one question. Why? Did you not just listen to the last 10 minutes? It's awful. However, if you do want to watch it, I'm not going to stop you. It's on YouTube. Just type in Mr. Scrooge, and then probably best if you put Tom Wood. That's Tom with a TH. Tom Wood. And it'll come up. And you can sit through it. That's your choice, though. Remember, that's your choice, not my choice. You're old enough to make your own decisions in this life. And if that's how you want to live your life, I'm not going to stand in your way. Now let's do this.
In our world of plenty, we can spread a smile of joy.
Here he is, boys and girls. It's the return of Bob. Bob, you're looking great.
Thanks, Jack.
In keeping with today's theme, what better way to bring a creepy smile of joy than to spill some blood? Well, I mean, into a bag, and donate it. Giving blood is such a simple action that can help so many people. It only takes about 8 to 10 minutes, but during that time, you can save up to 3 lives. Plus, after donating, they'll usually provide you with some snacks and drinks. And after about 10 to 15 minutes, you can be on your way. The whole process is quick, convenient, and it doesn't really hurt. I mean, you will feel a pinch when the needle goes in, but there isn't any pain while the blood is being drawn. They'll make you feel comfortable, and if you're scared, just think about this fact. Every 2 seconds, somebody needs blood. You are doing this to help people in need, those in accidents, burn victims, those undergoing heart surgery, receiving an organ transplant, and battling cancer. Even Dracula would be proud. If you know of another way to give a part of yourself, you offer it to Jack, he'll bestow it on me, and together we'll spread our arms and ourselves around the world.
Yeah, that's a good one, that is. Yeah, we should all give blood. I used to. I don't anymore because of the pills I'm on. So I couldn't. But I did used to before I went on these pills. Not going to go into it. It's just one of those things. So, yeah, that is a good one. And it gives you... Do you know, I remember when I used to do it. It used to give me... I used to feel really proud and I'd go and brag about it down the pub. And also, because I had a pint less blood in me, I could get drunk cheaper and quicker. So that's another good side effect of it. Yeah, good one, that one, Bob. While I'm here... It's the obligatory plugging of Festive Foreign Film Fans. That's Bob's podcast. If you're not listening to it, I want you to write out 50 times, I will listen to Bob's pod. It's really good. And the latest episode's just come out. So get out there and listen to it, Festive Foreign Film Fans. Now let's do this. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. Boys and girls, on last episode's quiz, I scored 8 because I got that Gloria Estefan song wrong. These are the other scores that were sent in. Pamela Wootton, just to say, boys and girls, Pamela Wootton was hit by Hurricane Helene. So, yeah, my thoughts go out to her. She's back home now. It sounds like everything's going okay, but there's a lot of tidying up to do. She left the house in a right state before she went out, so now she's got to go back and Hoover and stuff like that. I think it's a little bit more than that. So my thoughts go out to her. But Pamela Wootton scored... 5, which could be worse. For example, 4, 3, 2, or 1. Benji Pearson scored 7. Mike Westphal scored 7. Sean Sotka, the presenter of Christmas Podcast, he scored 8. Just a little aside here, I've mentioned his show before and he's been on the show. If you're looking for more Christmas podcasts to listen to, check out his podcast because every episode he tells you about what new Christmas podcasts are out there. Definitely worth having a listen to. Mary Pulte scored, are you ready, boys and girls? 9. Yes, 9. Well done, Mary Pulte. Yes, she beat me, which I'm a little bit annoyed about, but not so annoyed that I'm going to kick up a fuss. And remember last episode, boys and girls, when everyone else had only scored 4, Jeannie Mulligan scored 7. Are you ready, boys and girls? Jeannie Mulligan scored 2. She scored 2, boys and girls. She did. I kid you not. Yeah, she scored 2. 2. I'm going to keep saying it. 2. She scored 2. Jeannie. You scored 2, Jeannie. Sorry, Jeannie. I'm not sorry, actually. It's your fault. You should know more about Christmas. But don't worry, boys and girls, because she's going to be on in a bit to help us go through the answers. You remember she was on the show last episode? She's on the show again this episode. She can't stay away. So I'm going to ask the questions, and then Jeannie will be here afterwards to give you the answers. Question number 1. Which pantomime character is told by the Bells of London to turn again? Now, a lot of you out there might not know much about pantomime, but this is quite a famous fairy tale. Would you call it a fairy tale? Folk tale? Fairy tale? Yeah, so you might know that one. The Bells of London are telling him as he's leaving, they're saying, turn again. I won't say the rest of it because that would give it away. That was question number 1. Question number 2. Real Christmas trees outsell artificial ones in the UK by about 3-1. Is that true? Or is that false? Question number 3. In the song, The 12 Days of Christmas, what were given on the 9th day? Okay? What were given by your true love? You should know. You were there. You opened it, didn't you? Remember? Remember what day it was? It was the 9th. The 9th day. What was in there? Question number something. In which European country does Sinterklaas, St. Nicholas, and not Santa Claus, arrive in a different port in mid-November every year, having travelled with his assistant, Schwart Piet, by steamboat from his home in Spain? And interestingly, Belgium has an almost identical tradition, but he always arrives in the same port, the port of Antwerp. So, which country is that? Question number something. Which American child star of the 1930s and 40s said, "I stopped believing in Santa Claus when I was 6. Mother took me to see him in a department store and he asked for my autograph." So who was that? Who was that child star? Next one. 21st Century Christmas was a number 2 hit single in 2006. It was one of a number of Christmas-related hits for which singer among his 124 top 40 hits in total? Did you get that? He had 124 top 40 hits. But it was the only one of his Christmas songs to have the word Christmas in the title. Okay? Who was that? I have covered that song on the show. These are the opening lyrics from which number 1 hit from 1988. The child is a king. The carolers sing. The old is past. There's a new beginning. Dreams of Santa. Dreams of snow. There you go. Who sung that? Next one. Hundreds of years ago, they're not specific, it's just hundreds of years ago, in England, what title was given to the person whose job it was to preside over the Feast of Fools at Christmas time and whose equivalent in Scotland was known as the Abbot of Unreason? Okay, so what was his title in England? What was he called? Next one. In 2003, a character named Billy Mack, played by Bill Nighy, had a hit called Christmas is All Around based on the Troggs' Love is All Around. In which film did the song feature? I'm sure you'll get that one. And the last one, the Matthew Walker Company of Heena in Derbyshire was founded in 1899, making it the world's oldest producer in the world of what Christmas food? Okay, you've got to take a stab on that one, kids. Unless you know it, then don't take a stab. Just write down the answer. So there you go, that's your 10 questions. Yeah, I won't lie to you, some of those are a bit Brit-centric, but, you know, I've covered a lot of them. So you might know them, you might not. But let's find out if Jeannie knows them. Boys and girls, now it's time for the answers. And I have the lovely Jeannie Mulligan, who has been on the show far too many times lately. She is going to give us her answers. And by all accounts, she's got all 10 correct. So question number 1, Jeannie. Which pantomime character is told by the Bells of London to turn again?
I know I've got this wrong. Puss in Boots.
See, that's not too bad. It's wrong. But, no, because it's got a cat in it, you see. Because the bells say, "Turn again, Dick Whittington, Lord Mayor of London." So it was Dick Whittington.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Dick Whittington?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember when the bells told him to turn again?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Now I've said it. Do you remember it?
I do know you've said it.
Oh, you let yourself down. Right. Yeah. Question number 2. Right. True or false? Here we go. Real Christmas trees outsell artificial ones in the UK by about 3-1. True or false?
False.
No, it's true.
Is it?
It is true. Yeah, but here's the thing. I suppose if you've already got your artificial tree, you're not going to need to buy a new one, are you? So a lot of people have got one that they've had for years, maybe. I don't know. Okay. Question number 3. In the song, The 12 Days of Christmas, what were given by your true love? Is your true love? You must remember what he gave you. It was the 9th day. What did he give you? Tell me now.
I genuinely have no idea. I seriously have no idea.
Of course you've got an idea, because you've heard the song. So there's only like 12 things to choose from. If you said it's like a pear tree, obviously you're wrong. Ain't gold rings, but it's got to be one of the it's one of the big ones, isn't it? We're getting higher in the numbers. Take a stab, Jeannie.
I don't know. I was going to say the gold rings, but like...
It's 5 gold rings.
But I just don't know. It's like I hear it all the time, but I just sing it, but I just like, I have no idea. Sorry, Jack.
It should be. 9 Ladies Dancing.
I didn't
even have to look at the answers.
I would say, oh God, I knew that, but I didn't.
Shame on you. Right. In which European country does Sinterklaas arrive in a different port in mid-November every year, having travelled with... Which country is that?
The Netherlands.
The Netherlands. Yes. How do you know that one, Jeannie?
because I lived in the Netherlands for 5 years.
We
used to go see like Sinterklaas come and Zwarte Piet, and yeah, Lily, my daughter, was born there. So at least I got that one right.
Well done. Okay. Which American child star of the 30s and 40s, blah, 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 Santa asked her for autograph?
Shirley Temple.
Boom. Well done.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, hard to believe you got one right.
It's the second one, Jack. Stop it.
Okay, next one. That 21st century Christmas. Whose song was that?
This is just a guess. Is it Cliff Richard?
Of course it's Cliff Richard, yeah.
Get in there. Yeah,
I think I might have talked about that song as well. I'm not 100% sure, but I think I talked about it in an episode. I've done over 100 episodes now. It's hard to keep track of all the crap I've talked about. Right, question number something. These are the opening lyrics from which number one hit from 1988? The child's a king, the carolers sing. The old has passed, get over it. There's a new beginning. Dreams of Santa, dreams of snow.
Christmas time, mistletoe and wine.
Well,
is that right?
Done. Mistletoe and wine, yeah. Who sung it?
Cliff Richard.
Cliff Richard again, yeah. Next one. Hundreds of years ago in England, what title was given to the person whose job it was to preside over the Feast of Fools, and his equivalent in Scotland was the Abbot of Unreason?
I had no idea.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. That's the Lord of Misrule. Does that ring any bells?
Never would.
Looking at your
that.
Face, there's no bells ringing at all. In there. No. Never heard of the Lord of Misrule?
No. Must be English thing.
I think it was, yeah. It's like a big tradition where everyone would change their jobs. So like you'd have one of the lowly servants would become like the king or the Lord of Misrule, and it'd be his job to make sure everyone was having fun and being silly and whatnot. Next one. Oh, I was going to do a joke at the end of that, actually. We're doing it again. We're not going to do it again. I was going to say it's Cliff Richard. That would have been funny, you see, because then we get three Cliff Richard jokes.
It would be funny.
Okay, it would be funny. It's too late. Yeah. I missed the moment. I can't do it again. In 2003, a character named Billy Mack, played by Bill Nighy, had a hit called Christmas Is All Around, based on the Troggs' Love Is All Around. In which film?
Love, Actually.
Of course it was.
Yay, well done, I indeed. Love that movie.
Okay, and the last question. The Matthew Walker Company, what Christmas food they've been making for 125 years?
Again, this is a guess. Mince pies?
What would your second guess have been?
Christmas pudding?
Should have gone with your second guess. Yeah, sorry, Gina.
Aww.
Right, how many did you get?
I got 10.
10?
Yeah.
You sure?
I got 1, 2, 3.
I can't believe you didn't even get the blooming ninth day of Christmas. That's shame. Shame, shame.
And I got 5. I did better than I normally do.
Really? You only got 5?
Yeah.
But look at this. Hold on a second. You said false to the Christmas tree one, did you?
Yeah.
Did you think it was more or less then?
Did I think what was more or less?
More or less Christmas trees. Just real ones. Do you think it's more or less Christmas trees?
I thought that it was going to be like less real Christmas trees.
Oh, did you? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, hang on. How many did I get? I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Whatever, Jack.
I got 10. Yeah, I got 10, boys and girls. I got 10, and Jeannie's furious about it. I'll teach you, Jeannie. I did. I got them all.
Reading the answers. You see the answers.
I look at the answers after I've answered them. I don't cheat. Yeah. There's one week I got 6 and I was really disappointed. But this week I got 10. Don't tell me you're not impressed, Jeannie. Everyone's impressed. Well.
Cheater.
Do you know what? Normally, Jeannie, when I've got people on the show, I go, what do you want to plug? You've got nothing to plug, have you?
No.
Anything you want to plug? Give me anything you want to plug.
Oh, the kids' skills Christmas fair.
Are you helping out with it, are you?
Yeah, I help out with that. Do I really need to plug that?
What village is it? Can you only go if you live in your village?
You can only go if you live... Well, I live in a little village called Enniskerry. It's really...
Can you hear that, kids? If you live in Enniskerry in Ireland, make sure you go to the Christmas fair.
But it's not actually in Enniskerry.
Where is it then? What?
The next village behind Enniskerry is called Glencullen.
Got that, kids. Glencullen. Make sure you go to Glen. Don't go to Enniskerry, okay? Get yourself to Glencullen. What stall are you running, Jeannie?
So it'll just probably be like the cake stall, and it's in St. Patrick's National School. And I'll get the date here if anybody wants to go.
It's just good. The place will be inundated with all my 3 listeners. They'll be booking their flights.
They will. It'll be... So, guys, it's going to be on Sunday, the 8th of December, if anybody wants to come from 12 until 3.
Eighth? That's when everyone's going to be up in blooming Dublin doing their Christmas shopping.
Oh, I'd say we're trying to plug it. Sure, no one's going to come to the Christmas fair this year. They're all going to be in doing their Christmas shopping.
Well, you'll have my three listeners. They'll make sure they head across to it. Thanks for coming on, Jeannie. It's been blinding.
Thank you so much, Jack. It was really nice talking to you.
Five. Shame on you. Boys and girls, this episode's recommendation is a podcast I've just started listening to called Dear Sugars. And here's the blurb. Hosted by Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond, this podcast fields all your questions, no matter how deep or dark, and offers radical empathy in return. And it's like an agony aunt radio show, really. People send in their dilemmas, you know, their personal questions about relationships, about all sorts of stuff, and they answer the questions. I just enjoyed listening to it, because don't forget, I work on my own, so it's like I'm having a gossip, really. Yeah. If you want to check it out, shouldn't have too much trouble finding it. Just type in Dear Sugars Podcast and it'll come up. I'll have a link in the show notes. Yeah, there's hundreds and hundreds of episodes out there. It's been going quite a long time. It's been going since about 2014, I think. So, yeah, there's hundreds of episodes and, you know, if that's your thing, you might enjoy it. If it's not your thing, don't bother. There we go. Dear Sugars. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you to all the people that sent in their score from the quiz. I love hearing it, and I'm not going to judge anyone, apart from Jeannie, who only got 2 last episode. She did a bit better today. Well done, Jeannie. Thanks, of course, to Jeannie for being on the show again, and to Bob for his 2 segments. If you want to get in touch, you know what to do. Just email me at totalchristmas@gmail.com. Don't forget, I'm giving away those books. All you've got to do is put, yeah, I'll have them, and you might win. If you win, you'll get an email round about the 6th of November, and I'm getting posted out to you, so you'll definitely have them in time for Christmas. You can also go on the website, that's totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry, happy Christmas.
Almost finished.
Almost finished? What else can there be? You're going to dip it in yoghurt? Cover it with chocolate buttons?
Who knows? We're going to pop it in the Christmas box.
But I don't want a Christmas box.
But you said you wanted it gift wrapped.
I did, but...
This is the final flourish.
Can I just pay?
All we need now...
Oh, God.
There's a sprig of holly.
No, 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 no bloody holly.
But, sir, the...
Leave it, just leave it.